Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome, my friends, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. Our AccuWindow forecast, 69 degrees outside, just finished the fourth major thunderstorm this week. Quite surprising for Western Idaho. The solar wind tonight, 305.1 kilometers per second, and the proton count is so low it doesn't even matter. You could catch them in your hand and not worry about it. No sunspots, and only a mild solar wind. If there is an aurora tonight, it won't come from the sun. Phone lines will be open all night tonight, toll-free in the U.S., 888-228-4494. And if you're anywhere else on planet or off planet, write this number down, put it on a piece of paper, put it behind a magnet, stick it to your refrigerator door, or post-it note it to the front of your laptop, because we are live between 5 and 8 p.m. Pacific time, 530-776-5154, 530-776-5154. On June 11th, researchers at NASA's Columbia Scientific Balloon Facility in Texas launched a telescope named EBEX. Its mission? To measure the faint polarization of cosmic microwave background radiation, also known as CMBR. Linear polarization of the CMBR could prove that the large-scale structure of the universe today was cast by tiny quantum fluctuations in space just a split second after the Big Bang. EBEX is probing the earliest moments of creation. Kind of interesting what's going on out there. China correspondent. Now, this is going to sound a little alarming. I don't mean it to be that way. We're not alarmists here. But we are about bringing the past to the future. And trying to explain to you that there are some mighty strange things going on as the Earth nears this very peculiar place in the universe. China correspondent Stephen McDonnell and ABC cameraman Rob Hill saw day turn into night as a freak storm swept across the capital Beijing on Friday. It was pitch black outside, he said, and you could see people looking out from the office towers across the road from us, McDonald said. Today's extreme weather follows yesterday's hailstorms across eastern China's Anhui province, which killed 14 people and injured more than 180, AFP reports. Anhui's civil Affairs Bureau said that more than 10,000 people were evacuated and nearly 9,700 houses collapsed in yesterday's severe storm. Anhui said Anhui was struck by hail and winds of up to 104 kilometers per hour. That's a little over 70 miles an hour, causing $82 million worth of damage. A similar hailstorm struck the region in the first week of June, killing 23 people and injuring more than 200. Officials have warned residents that more dangerous weather could follow. The pictures of this if you get a chance to look at it. It was on Drudge Report a couple of days ago. I was in Beijing a couple of weeks ago, and although the city tends to remain somewhat overcast, daytime is daytime. This was 11:48 in the morning, and the headlights are on and the building lights are on, and it's quite amazing to see the city that dark. I have seen storms like that on rare occasion in North Carolina or in Kentucky, but for China to get it like this is very freak. It's not over. Parts of New Jersey were pummeled by a massive hailstorm on Monday afternoon, leaving it looking as if a June blizzard blew through with inches of dime-sized pellets piling up. It was a day for snow boots and a jacket as several inches fell in what's being looked at as one freak storm. Plowing snow, ice, whatever you want to call it on the street in Washington Township in June, it wasn't an understatement to say folks in the neighborhood were shocked. There's more. Thunder rolled through the Southland, and freak storms pelted the region with hail, lightning, and unreasonable rain, killing two women in San Bernardino County, California. Bedeviled aviation and touching off more than a dozen brush fires on the parched mountain slopes ringing Los Angeles County. A Southwest Airlines plane bound for Burbank was struck by lightning more than half an hour into its flight, forcing the pilot to return to Oakland with the 53 passengers on board. There were no injuries or damage to the aircraft, and travelers were put on later flights. The plane returned to service after a safety inspection. Temperatures were about 10 degrees below normal in the area, with downtown Los Angeles registering 67 degrees in June at 2 p.m. Rain is so rare at this time of year that records were broken in Palmdale, Sandburg, and Camarillo, where there has been zero precipitation on any June 3rd in the years that the National Weather Service has been keeping records, the Oxnard office reported. So there you have it. China, New Jersey, and Southern California all experiencing within a 1 week period, very freak weather. And we're not talking unreasonable heat. We're talking about unreasonable cold. Seems like the whole northern hemisphere has been turned upside down. Also, in NASA news, lacrosse bombing of Moon, October 9, 2009, the planned October 9, 2009 bombing of the moon. Yes, you heard me, the bombing of the moon by a NASA orbiter that will bomb the moon with a 2-ton kinetic weapon, also known as a bullet, to create a 5-mile-wide deep crater as an alleged water-seeking and lunar colonization experiment, is contrary to space and space law prohibiting environmental modification of celestial bodies. We also call this terraforming. If you'll remember, back in the early 60s, some brilliant scientist had the idea of using a nuclear weapon to create a new bay in Alaska. His theory was that if he could explode the bomb, create the bay, by the time the water, the ocean came in and filled it in and everything got diluted, it would save the area billions of dollars in excavation. The area would heal itself just like Trinity did when that bomb went off. And within 20 years, you'd have a thriving seaport off the coast of Alaska. That's so crazy. This sounds. The NASA moon bombing, a component of the L-Cross mission, may also trigger conflict with known extraterrestrial civilizations on the moon, as reported on the moon in witnessed statements by U.S. astronauts Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, and in witnessed statements to the National Science or National Security Agency, pardon me, photos and documents regarding an extraterrestrial base on the far side of the moon. Now, I don't know if you know what the ramifications of this are, but there are those in the exopolitical organizations that do. If the true intent of the LCROSS mission moon bombing is a hostile act by NASA against known extraterrestrial civilizations and settlements on the moon, then NASA, and by extension the U.S. government, are guilty of aggressive war, which is the most serious of war crimes under the UN Charter and the Geneva Conventions, to which the U.S. is subject. The UN Outer Space Treaty, which the U.S. has ratified, requires that, quote, the moon and other celestial bodies shall be used by all states parties to the treaty exclusively for peaceful purposes. The establishment of military bases, installations and fortifications, the testing of any type of weapons, and the conduct of military maneuvers on celestial bodies shall be forbidden, close quote. 98 nations have ratified and 125 nations have signed the UN Outer Space Treaty. So, you have a mission being put together called LCROSS. It is slated to go October 9th of this year. That is less than 4 months away. They're going to launch it, take it to the moon, and discharge this giant bullet, 2 tons, 4,000 pounds. It'll probably strike the surface at somewhere around Mach 3 or Mach 4, and create a 5-mile-wide deep crater. The idea is to expose enough of the subsurface of soil to be able to spectrographically and analyze what's down there. It's exactly like strip mining, where you set explosives and literally just blow the crap out of the area, exposing the coal and gold and whatever else is under the ground there. And then it takes 10 years to fix the hole and 20 years for the reclamation efforts to take place, which I doubt either one of those would ever be done on the moon. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson broke ground on Friday on construction of Spaceport America, the world's first facility built specifically for space-bound commercial customers and fee-paying passengers. The $198 million project, which is being funded by the New Mexico state government, is located on a remote high desert range near the town of Truth, or Consequences. Virgin Atlantic, those of you that are not familiar with Virgin, Virgin is headed up by the billionaire adventurer Branson. Don't know if you know any of his activities, but the gentleman who put together the craft that launched successfully to space and back twice in 30 days, winning the $1 million prize, actually ran out of funds and had to go to Mr. Branson and his Virgin group for funding. And of course, by the time the second launch was made and returned, and the cameras were marshaled, and the news media made their way to the landing site or to the company site, the original inventor was no longer in the camera. It was Mr. Branson. So, Virgin Galactic is investing more than $300 million in developing a new space launch system that will operate from the site after it opens. Do the math, people. $300 million in private investment, $198 million in state government investment, is almost $500 million invested into a spaceport. It says specifically for spacebound commercial customers and fee-paying passengers. We know what happens to facilities like that when conflict breaks out. They have a strange way of reverting to clauses hidden deep in those contracts so that the use of those facilities suddenly becomes more state conscious, shall we say. The spaceship hitches a ride up to around 50,000 feet attached to a specifically designed carrier aircraft. When released from the aircraft, it is designed to hurtle into suborbital space powered by a rocket. 50,000 feet is completely achievable by an ordinary aircraft. A 747, a 737, even a Learjet can fly at 50,000 feet. It takes a while to get there, but the nice thing about it is you're in the very bottom part of the stratosphere, very little resistance to air, and you'll need a rocket or you'll need a ramjet or something to greatly turbocharge the amount of air that you're going to get into that that engine, because there just simply is not enough for combustion. So you have to have solid fuel, or you have to have catalyzed fuel such as hydrogen peroxide or even solid fuel boosters in order to get into a low orbit. A suborbital orbit or suborbital speed is somewhere around 14,000 miles an hour. Orbital speed somewhere around 16,000 to 17,000 miles an hour. And then if you're going to break the gravitational pull and go tangentially out into space, you need to get to about 18,000 miles an hour. That's pretty quick. That's getting on up there, and you're going to have something in the order of 4,000 to 5,000 feet per second acceleration out the back to be able to break that orbit. Hold for one moment, please, while I drink some water. I don't know if you've seen the new Star Trek movie. I found it fascinating on several levels because the characters, although new actors, were well known. And the new actors did a very good job of at least aligning with the character idiosyncrasies that we're used to in the original Star Trek characters. And I found that Kirk and Spock and Uhura and, you know, Chekhov and Sulu and all the rest of them were quite well done. But the interesting thing was there in Iowa, the spaceport where the starships were being constructed and shuttles were being launched from the ground out to the spaceport. That's kind of the scale of what we're talking about here in New Mexico, a $500 million facility with a special lifting craft, which is designed to lift spacecraft up into the 50,000-foot range, maybe in a very wide spiral, climbing and climbing and climbing. You know how long it takes to get that fully loaded jet that you ride in up to 39,000 feet. Now, it doesn't climb straight up, but certainly makes a lot better progress in the thick air down toward the ground, climbing it way better than 3,000 feet a minute. As you get on up there, there isn't that much lift. The craft is going somewhere around 500 plus miles per hour. It takes a while to climb. And once you reach 50,000 feet, then you've got this great launch platform, and then either you launch the thing into a glide and then the rockets kick in, or the rockets kick in and take off right off the quasi-runway there at the top of the aircraft. Not quite unlike the X-15 runs that you've seen in many newsreels. So it'll be really interesting to see that happen. In fact, I would love to be on that carrier craft when they drop the first spacecraft, just to see it take off and climb up into suborbital realms. We have an interesting show for you tonight. I hardly ever call it a show. It really isn't. It's a program. But I want you to keep in mind that the phone lines are open, and we are going to be live all 3 hours tonight. There are a couple of upcoming events that I want you to be aware of. One is next weekend, the July 4th, 5th, and 6th. Actually, it's the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Will be the Earth Transformation Conference. This is one of the heavy hitters of the year, folks. If you want to see a UFO, if you want to hear the best speakers in the genre of UFOs, aliens, connections with higher consciousness, a very positive, very upbeat, very fear-free conference. It is doesn't necessarily have a theme except for Earth transformation. They're not pushing any particular religion, of course, no particular theories, but the best theoricians, the best practitioners, shamans, scientists, exopolitical experts. Alfred Lampermont Weber is going to be there. There will also be some first-time, first-level human consciousness experiments going on there. And I don't mean holding hands and sitting in a circle and singing either. I'm talking about high technology is being brought from over 1,000 miles away, is being brought to that area, and there will be at least two attempts with this experiment to connect this high technology, it's extremely high power, to connect it to a unified consciousness under the stars at the foot of Mount Adams. If you're interested in being part of that experiment, and this won't be part of the Guinness Book of World Records, it'll be much bigger than that, then you need to make your way to Trout Lake, Washington. Look it up, or you can go to ECETI, ECETI.org. Sign up. It's inexpensive. It's affordable. Take a bus, hitch a ride, fly, drive. Get yourself up there. Bring a tent. Bring a sleeping bag. Camp in the beautiful Echinacea fields below Mount Adams and partake of 2.5 days of the most amazing, uplifting, informative presentations you will see all year. You can go to every conference this year and not get what you can get there. So that's what's coming up next weekend. The H2O Live concert took place the Friday and Saturday of this weekend. It may still be going on today, but it was quite modified from its original billing. The original billing was it was going to be a 26-city concert with musicians tuning their instruments to 528 hertz, the frequency of love. It was going to be highly connected with the waters of the earth, with the beachside not only celebrations, but quasi-rituals going on where human consciousness would be directed at the water, billed as one of the largest earth healing events in history. As it turned out, many permits were not obtained, and most, if not all, of those beach ceremonies did not take place. But I have to tell you, I commend Leonard Horowitz for putting it together. It takes a tremendous amount of energy, of attention to detail, of personal commitment, and probably personal loss to put something of this size together. And we want him to do it again next year. Hopefully you all patronized it. If you did not patronize it, you should feel bad. No, if you do feel bad, though, you can go to the H2O Live banner at X Squared Radio. And you can click on it, and sometime during the next first time you think about it, next time you visit X Squared Radio, send them a couple dollars and help them get capitalized to do it again next year, bigger, better, and perhaps even more connected. I don't think it's the first year and only year that it'll happen, but it is the first year that it has happened, and I hope that they had some success. Maybe we'll be able to get a hold of Leonard Horowitz, get him to come on and give us a report for how that went. We have just a little bit more to give you. One of the interesting things about today, of course, it's Sunday and it's Father's Day, and it is also the beginning of summer. This is the summer, this is the solstice. This is the time when Earth, at least in the northern hemisphere, has the longest day of the year. When the sun reaches its maximum declination above the celestial equator, and at the same moment, winter begins in the southern hemisphere. So this is sort of the extremes of the planet in the northern and southern hemispheres. And now the sun begins its march back south toward the equator. And it would seem that weather would now turn to the cooler side. But I can tell you from my more than half century on this planet, that is not the case. The hot weather is yet to come. Those of you in New Jersey who have not put away your slicker or your sweatshirts yet, I think you can finally break the Hawaiian shirts out, because it's coming. So in the first hour, which we have about 35 minutes left, what I want to discuss with you is the subject of the origin of mortality. And it's not so much, you know, where did life come from? Did we crawl out of the primordial ooze and put on one cell at a time and then become some community of cooperating cells? You do this and I'll do that, and you do this and he'll do that, and you be bone and you be eye tissue and you be a brain, and we'll work together as a community. I'm not talking about that origin of mortality. What I'm talking about is the conditions under which the energy that makes up you, that thing that looks at you from the mirror each morning or each evening as you brush your teeth or prepare your skin with various emollients, I'm talking about the thing inside, the thing that animates you, the thing that experiences this biological transducer we lug around this planet against all gravity. I'm talking about the thing that actually has the relationship, that has the pain, that has the disappointment, that has the joy, the thing that laughs, the thing that cries inside of you. I'm talking about the experience, the origin of the experience of the connection, the union of that polarity, the spirit you and the solid you. The you that leaps like a gazelle and flies in your dreams and can breathe underwater, connected with the physical you that breaks and bruises and coughs and has to have all kinds of maintenance as time goes on. And there are some questions that go with this union. Not only is it an amazing connection of energies, let's call it the four basic energies of the universe. Those would be the large and small, or great and small, molecular forces, electromagnetism and gravity. They're all inside of you. And those parts of you that are not affected by those four forces of the universe. So if you think not so deeply about it, but certainly poignantly, you will see that there is some resonance going on between the energy that is the consciousness of you, the energy that is the personality of you, the Don, the Brooks, the Susie, the Patty, the Lori, the James of you, and the physical part of you, the part that's made up of the peas and carrots and hamburgers and Cokes and vitamins and all the things that you consume and where they come from. You eat things that are grown in other parts of the world, in Mexico and California and Arizona. You eat beef that's raised in Colorado, and you eat radishes that are grown in, you know, Nebraska, and you eat corn that's grown in Iowa. You know, these components come from portions of the earth. They didn't just spring up out of nothingness. They were built by water and minerals and chlorophyll and sunlight and even CO2 that was gathered at those points where that food was grown. It's not local. You, your body is not local. It comes from the entire earth. And if you eat anything imported, be it fish, canned goods, dried goods, or any of the exotics that you can get at the smaller deli section at Walmart, you are an amazing cross-section of Earth walking around on this planet. Can you imagine the difference in you if you had not consumed a single molecule that was not local? In other words, every single molecule that was put in your body, every molecule of H2O, water, every molecule of nitrogen, N2, that you breathed in, every oxygen molecule, every corn on the cob, every taco that you consumed was made with materials from where you were born, from where your parents were born and their parents were born. And then you compare yourself, your body, your physical being, against more international or more worldly beings. That is an interesting comparison. That is an interesting experiment. But when you consider that the spirit that is inside of you, the consciousness that makes you up, is so unique, there is not another one of you in the universe. Nowhere. There is a soulmate. There may be several that were divided, or the mathematical procedure that I think went on is actually a square root, that each consciousness took the square root of itself and became two. And those two consciousnesses are exactly equal, except one may be either both are positive or both are negative, because if they're squared, they come out to equal one unit again. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they are both identical in every way. They can be male and female. Anyway, the idea is that we have an amazing synergy, a combination, a resonance, or, for that matter, a dissonance. You know, what a dissonance is when you play one of the black keys and one of the white keys that don't go together. They don't harmonize with one another. It creates a sour note. It creates a destructive interference that weakens the whole. That does happen. That does happen. We do see combinations between the spirit inside and the body outside, and it doesn't match. Something went awry, or it went just by design, and the mismatch was the whole idea. I'm trying to get you to think about this scientifically, because we're going to break into a subject in our second hour that we don't normally talk about, especially with open lines, and that is the comparison of religiosity to science. I'm bringing this up for a particular reason, because in several of your lives this week, someone passed away. Could have been a family member, could have been a friend, could have been accidentally taken from this world, or could have left the world from illness, or could have left the world for other reasons, mortally. That is to say, they ceased to be mortal for a while. And that energy has made its way to this studio, not through my own experience. No one in my circle of friends or circle of acquaintances has passed away this week, but in yours, it has. And that energy has reached here, and we are considering that tonight in our second hour. What happens to the consciousness inside of the biological transducer upon separation? This first hour, and we have about 18 minutes left in this first hour, we want to consider what happens to the biological transducer, and for that matter, to the spirit inside of it, when they're put together. Is it the beginning? Is it the end? Is it the middle? That's very interesting. I think I mentioned last week I was driving down the freeway and saw one of those billboards that just has to make you chuckle. Some of you take it far too seriously, and the dogma is humorous and getting less and less interesting all the time. But the billboard was humorous. It said, if you die today, where will you spend eternity? And eternity was some mighty big letters. I think these things are probably 6 feet high, going the full length of the billboard. And of course, the local religious shop was at the bottom with a phone number, maybe a website. I guess you were supposed to jot it down while you're driving at 75 miles an hour down the freeway. But the main message was humorous, because I thought to myself, I wonder when eternity started. Then I realized it already had. We're already into eternity. In fact, I don't know if we're halfway through it, or a quarter of the way through it, or nearly close to the end. Or maybe we've just gone around a few times, kind of like a giant cosmic merry-go-round. Eternity has already begun. This is a scientific axiom, people. Take it to the bank. It is a true ism that cannot be changed. Go ahead, write it down, stick it on your refrigerator. Eternity has already begun. It left without you. Or should I say, the train is already moving and you're on it. So to somehow say, I am alive, therefore not part of eternity, and when I die, then I will be part of eternity, is not scientifically sound. So I want you to consider that deeply as you go through this week, and as you consider the original union between that dynamic, wonderful, animated being inside of you that's perfect in every way, and the physical, biological transducer, which you call your human body. And by the way, if you're not happy with the way that transducer is working, you think you've got a defective model, you can change it. No, I don't mean going down to the local mechanic shop and having various parts sucked out or taken off. I mean, change the environment in which your biological transducer rebuilds itself. The genetics that make up you are only part of the equation. The rest of that building process is your environment. That is to say, what you eat, how you exercise, whether you smile a lot or cry a lot, whether you eat a lot or drink a lot, whether you sleep a lot or whether you work hard, whether you learn or whether you just vegetate throughout the week. All of this is your environment, and it has an effect on your biological transducer. And for those of you who think only the physical is real, you're in really sad shape. I need you to definitely consider this throughout the week. Everything is energy, and thus affected and bathed constantly and fed like blood pumping through your veins, like the corpuscles that carry the nutrients from your lungs and from your small intestines to the rest of your body, cell by cell. I mean, you are bathed in consciousness. Your consciousness. And believe it or not, your consciousness is affecting the environment of those around you. And they don't have to be in your house. They don't have to be in your classroom. They don't have to be in your place of employ. All you really have to do is consider that other being. And your consciousness is affecting them. And you can do that for good or for ill. You can hate or you can love. You can send energy of healing and forgiveness to that person. Or you can project fear and paranoia. You can psychically attack that person by taking apart every single thing that person is trying to put together because you hate them for what they did to you. And you're ripping the planet apart when you do it. So let's consider, as we put this spirit together with this lump of clay we call the biological transducer, it stays animated as long as it will. Sometimes it breaks down. Sometimes it gets defects in it, and it doesn't work correctly. It gets molds in it and bacteria and viruses in it. We have to fight them off. Some of you have great immune systems and some of you do not. Some of you have weaknesses in your lungs or in your bones or in your liver or in your pancreas, and some of you do not. Those of you that do not are usually the biggest whiners I've ever met. Those of you that do and overcome them have made up a long list, an almost endless list of heroes and leaders and healers and doctors and teachers. Overcoming the weaknesses of the biological transducer very often results in the strength of the spirit. We have had victims of polio as president. We have had blind men make the most amazing music. We have had men and women who could not hear compose the most amazing music. We've had people without arms become the most amazing artists. And we've had people who can't control the sugar in their blood also become leaders and not only that, but very meaningful, fulfilling individuals of our society. I would dare say that if you went through the roster of great leaders throughout history, for good or for ill, from Napoleon to Jesus to everyone, you would find some weakness that they overcame. Sometimes that weakness is wealth. They were given so much it made them weak and they had to overcome it. Or they were born with so little that it made them strong and they came out of it and led us and showed ourselves to us so that we could grow. That union between the energy that makes up the human being, the being on the inside, and the biological transducer on the outside is the act of mortality, the creation of what we call mortality, tender and frail as it is, strong and overcoming and invincible as it is, this mortality. Consider how lucky you are. I don't mean to use that word. Let me back up just a little bit. I can't erase what I just said, so I didn't mean to sound like your parents. Let me express it another way. Consider the value of what you have. Consider the amount of energy in just the water alone that hydrates the cells of your body. There is enough energy inside of you, inside the borders of your skin, there is enough energy to power Los Angeles for a year. Everything. All the lights, all the garbage disposals, all the televisions, everything. That's how much energy is inside of you, just in the physical molecules of your body. The spirit that is inside of you not only can envision the smallest quanta, but also the formation of solar systems and galaxies and the movement thereof. In fact, the entire universe is folded up inside of your spirit. Two completely different forms of energy occupying the same space at the same time. Do you realize how much energy has been contained in a peaceful, harmonious way inside of your body? Believe me, it is not a waste, and it is not to be wasted. If excuse me, that much energy, that much consciousness, that much purpose and intent went into building you, putting you together, two magnificently complex and beautiful pieces. Do you think you only get one? Do you think that you could pay a little more attention to the day, to the color of the sky, to the value of a smile or a hug, to the incredible worth of every single being on this planet? Do you think you could do that? It's June 21st, the solstice, the longest day of the year. We're heading toward the winter solstice. 6 months. 6 months, do you think you could do that? If you could do that, everyone within the reach of my voice tonight, or if you're listening while you're working on your favorite project at your workstation on Monday, June 22nd, you have one less day than the people who heard this live. So you're going to have to get on the stick, people. You're going to have to realize what we're about to show you in this second hour. We're not preaching to you. We're trying to make you aware of the power you have inside of you and who you are, not who they told you you are, or, more importantly, who they told you are not. We're going to fix that in the second hour. And we're going to do it from a scientific point of view. Science is the consideration of evidence to prove or disprove various theories which have been purported to results of the experimentation on various hypotheses. So we're going to put a hypothesis to you tonight. And we're going to try to get you to consider this hypothesis in a scientific way, and if you have any questions about it, keep it to yourself. No, don't do that. No, 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 no. What you need to do is you need to pick up the phone, and you need to call us. And that phone number, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us, I promise. What you'll realize is that we're easy to talk to. We want you to call in. We want you to ask questions. That number, 530-776-5154. And don't go away, because we're going to take a very short musical break, and we'll be right back after these. We'll just take a music break, because some people like to play commercials, and we don't care about the commercials. If you want to buy something you're shopping this summer, why don't you start at X Squared Radio? We have a lot of great affiliates. They have something or everything that you're looking for. You take care of them, we'll take care of you. We'll be back. Don't go away. Keep your brains open. We're about to go somewhere very far away. Here, X Squared Radio, June 21st, 2009, hour two of X Squared Radio about to begin. I think you should know that there is an event coming up, of course, if you missed our first hour. The Earth Transformation Conference is coming up in Trout Lake, Washington. If you need to know more, you can go to ECETI.org. And you can find out more about it. I promise if you make your way up there, not only will you stand a very, very good chance of seeing a UFO, but you're going to hear some very, very excellent speakers, and you're going to find out maybe a lot about yourself, which could be very cool. And I'm pretty sure that you're going to have a good time, because there's going to be a lot of great people up there. And a lot of neat activities. One great experiment that's going to take place. I'm not going to give any details about it, but it's after dark. It's outside. It's under the stars. It won't be part of the Guinness Book of World Records, but I guarantee you're going to mark it down in your diary. This is a consciousness experiment of the highest order. Very high, very powerful technology is being brought to bear that night. You don't want to miss it. Next weekend, the July 4th weekend. Oh, I'm sorry, next weekend is the 28th. July 4th weekend is when the event is going to occur. I promise that you'll enjoy it. Not going to spend a lot of time on commercials tonight. If you want inkjet cartridges, books, outdoor clothing, go to X Squared Radio first. Do some shopping with our affiliates. We would most appreciate it. It helps us keep the lights on. And we will be back with more X Squared Radio in about 40 seconds.
Spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
All right, Earth Explorers, get ready. As we begin hour two of X Squared Radio, we're going to go someplace maybe you've never considered before. Maybe you have and someone told you to stop doing it. That's okay. We're going to go there with confidence and without fear tonight. You and me. Here we go. All right. In our last hour, we were considering the union between the spirit, the non-physical part of you, and the physical part of you, the thing that's made up with the peas and carrots and Big Macs that make up you. And, we had you consider where all those peas and carrots come from. They come from all over the world. They come from, depending on the extent of your local grocery, from all over this planet. And they are combined to make up every single cell of your body. Every 7 years, with the exception of your brain, every single cell in your body will be changed out. That's right. Every skin cell, every cell in your intestines, your eyeballs, your tongue, everything, the muscles and vessels that make up your body are changed out. Not all at once, one cell at a time. Some die rather quickly because they don't last very long. They get a lot of wear and tear, like the epithelial cells. These are flat, very fast multiplying cells that make up the inside of your nose and mouth and throat and esophagus and stomach and blah, blah, blah. And very slow dividing, long living cells in your body are all changed out one at a time every 7 years. So if you're 42 years old, you have been changed out six times, five times. And that process is going on every single day. Now, when those cells die, they pass on the information to the next cell via the genetics that are in it, and the next cell divides to replace the one that is passing away. And that process kind of keeps you generally in the same shape. Some of you have had a little too many Big Macs and you've put on a little extra biological transducer. I see you out there packing it around, uncomfortable, smothering, unable to tie your own shoes, so you wear slip-ons, unable to chase a frisbee or run with your dog. Time to get it off, people. Get up off the couch and go walk. Drink water instead of soda. Put down the candy bar and get back to where you were when you were a kid. Get back to that leaping gazelle you once were. You'll be happy for it. End of advice. Okay, so we have this union between the biological transducer and the spirit, and it's called the human body, and it's called the mortal being. You are fragile, subject to burning and dysentery and everything else. Sometimes, most of the time, you bounce back just fine. Sometimes you have some permanent damage from it. By the way, don't go out and stick needles in your body and get a tattoo. You were made fine just the way you are. Unless, of course, you like that kind of artwork. And you know what? I change the paintings out in my house from time to time because I get tired of looking at them and I want to see something else. A tattoo is permanent. It might be art, but you get tired of it after a while. So don't do anything permanent to yourself. Anyway, what we face as we consider the beginning of mortality is just as important as what we consider when mortality ends. I can tell you that I know some of you out there have had a demise in your locale, be it a friend, be it a neighbor, be it someone that was close to you, someone you saw every day at work, or even a family member. And somewhere along this week, maybe that moment, or maybe even now, you're considering why. Or, even more fearful, where? Where? Where did they go? I am so lost without that person. What can I do? Dogma is stubbornly adhering to insufficiently proven beliefs. Inflexible, rigid, often assigned to the other key word, religious dogma. We're not going to use the word religious tonight. We're going to use the word religiosity. Religiosity maybe is a new word coined, but it basically means the art of selling a belief system to someone else. And to see someone selling a belief system by using the recent demise of someone in the local area as an example. Okay, you saw what happened to Freddie. He's no longer with us. By the way, if Freddie did leave your life recently, I didn't mean to be personal. I'm just using it as an example. You saw what happened to Freddie. He's no longer with us. You don't want to be like Freddie. Or they may say, you know what? Freddie's in a good place. Freddie's in a much better place than he was yesterday. And I know where that place is. And if you want to go to that place, you need to do what I tell you to do. Or better yet, you need to accept this brochure. And you need to join. And, of course, that goes without saying. You'll have to put some money in this pan when we pass it around. But let's not go there right now. Religiosity is the profession of selling religious dogma to another. I'll tell you, here are some examples. We have a little village, and the village has a stone statue that is our God. We worship it. We lay flowers before it. We paint it yearly. We have dances around it and fires on specific nights when the stars are out or the sun is blotted out from behind the clouds. And we believe in this statue, and you will grow up believing in it too. And every once in a while, things don't go very well around here. Our crops mysteriously die, or insects fly in from somewhere else and devour it. You know what? We have found over the thousands of years, or hundreds of years, or several weekends that we've had this stone statue, that if we dance hard enough and we put flowers in the right frequency and we hold hands well enough and treat one another well, that those insects seem to stay away. Our crops do better. We have enough and to spare. And so we don't want to anger the stone statue. And life goes on, generation after generation. The stone gets a little weathered, but other than that, he's doing okay. And then outsiders come in. And the outsiders are from the other side of the mountain, the angry side of the mountain. And they come in and they scorn and laugh and criticize and say, you must be joking. A stone statue. Get real, people. That stone statue has nothing to do with anything. You need to come where we are, because on the other side of this mountain is a terrible, horrible, vicious volcano god. And he sometimes gets very angry. He burns our villages. And we have found that if we take a certain package up to him on a regular basis, dump it over into the side and let him consume it in a giant yellow flame, that he leaves us alone. And our village has been pretty good for about 40 years. Of course, about 41 years ago, somebody really pissed him off. And he belched forth orange rock that rolled down and burned our whole village to the ground. Killed many people. We lost all our cattle. All but two, which is why we have the flock that we do now. So you don't want to anger the volcano god. This stone god, you need to forget about this guy. It's not helping you at all. And about the time this great community is going along and they're breaking guava among one another, another group shows up in a mysterious ship pulled along by white linen in front of the wind. They step off with shining helmets and very finely tooled animal skins on them, and they say, the stone god is just a rock. And the volcano, forget about it. It's just a volcano. What you really need to do is you need to believe in our church. We have a church, and that's why we're great, and that's why we rule the world. You see where I'm going with this? All you really have to do is pick up any Western civilization history book or any U.S. history book. Read a few pages. It only takes a few people. It doesn't matter whether you start before the Greeks or whether you start after the Aborigines or whether you start post-constitutionally. The story is the same. There is fear peddled out there to the tune of, it is inestimable how much money we're talking about, how much control we're talking about, how large the armies are, and even larger the stacks of the dead that have been wiped out of its way in the name of its god. And you don't have to even pick up the official history book. Pick up any religious book you want. Pick up the Bible and read it. Pick up the Old Testament. Pick up the Kabbalah. Pick up the Quran. Pick up the Popol Vuh and you read the same story over and over again. Steel or lead or copper or bronze or stone applied to flesh in the name of God. And it goes on. Even today, our modern, wonderful, enlightened, open, incredibly intelligent, fast-moving, world-communicating race of humans still is doing the same thing. Only the swords are more mighty and the effects are more far-reaching, albeit more antiseptic. It's a little easier now. Leaders can sit in the comfort of their finely leather-tooled office, pick up the phone, and now wipe people off the face of the earth at the push of a button. All in the name of God. So let's explain, let's talk about the parting of the spirit from the biological transducer we call the body. In our first hour, we talked about the joining of the two. Let's talk about the separation of the two. What in the world? Ooh, that's a nice statement. What in the universe is going on? As the biological transducer returns to the energy realm from which it came, the electrons stop flowing. They become resident to the molecules from whence they came, enough to keep the chemistry balanced, the equation balanced, and the body begins to decay back, obeying the laws of the universe, following the path of entropy, and becoming dust again. It doesn't care. It doesn't matter. The difference between being mortal and not being mortal is this. The spirit, that leaping, flying, wonderfully creative, musical being that enjoyed things, exists forever. It never dies. In fact, it could be said, as far as this universe is concerned, it has never been born, because it is part of Source. In fact, it has everything inside of it to be Source, which means, if you just consider this just for a moment, the experience, the knowledge that is inside of that spirit being that makes up you, far transcends, far extends anything that you could learn in a single lifetime. If that's the case, then you have a job to do. You have a challenge. And you've always had this challenge. When you're born into this biological transducer, it can't take care of itself. You must be taken care of by another. Whether they care about you or not is irrelevant. You still have to be taken care of. You can't even walk. You can't even wipe yourself. You can't even suck from a straw yet. You certainly can't hold your own cheeseburger. By the time you are able to do that and explain to someone else that you even want the cheeseburger, you're so locked into this three-dimensional world and the motions of gravity and the results and powers of the sun that you have forgotten what you are and who you are. Now, many of you, in fact, I would venture to say the majority of you here on this earth, have been here for a long, long time. You've gone through this mortal existence over and over and over and over and over again, and you don't really learn much new. I mean, come on, people, we rode horses until about 140 years ago, maybe 110 years ago. It was only then that we even thought about roads with a dashed line down the middle. We didn't think about electricity. We didn't think about plumbing and hygiene. Are you kidding me? We've been here for tens of thousands of years, and only then we figured out that we could compress steam and make something go forward. We could ignite petroleum and enjoy frying rubber off of our back tires for fun. I mean, look where we've come from the time, and we have seen drawings and paintings and old black and white films of people who tried and tried and tried and tried to figure out how to do something as simple as fly. They jumped off buildings, they drove cars, they leaped off of trains. Everyone had this vision, and none of them worked until one day, a couple of bicycle mechanics fly for 150 feet. And then everybody said, oh, that's how it's done. And now we're flying at Mach 4, Mach 5. We're populating space as fast as we can afford to do so. Why do you think that happened? Because somebody remembered. somebody broke through past the distance of one mortal life. They went back and they gathered information. Not from here. Not from this world. From another world where they came from. Where their spirit came from. The Teslas and the Edisons and the Einsteins and the Thorns, they came to this world. They remembered and helped us put these pieces together. And many of those first-timers or second-timers to this world are you. You are out there with those thoughts. You are out there with those dreams. You are out there writing it down, rehearsing it, building it in your shop, rehearsing it on your guitar or your piano. These wonderful, beautiful, extensive creations that are coming forth and have come forth for the last couple hundred years are from the depths of this experience. And so the in-between time, and this is kind of an interesting perspective, the in-between time we might call mortality. You might live 50 years, you might live 100 years. I think we're getting close to being able to punch out 120, 130, 140 on a regular basis. Maybe the generation of 50-year-olds right now is only a third of the way done. But it's still a cosmic flash. It is still no longer than the flash of your camera compared to the age of space. And yet the experience that you bring to bear, the power and the intention and the love which you have inside of you is much, much more powerful than you can imagine. So if this in-between time, this microsecond we call mortality, after you learn to walk, after you learn to feed yourself and pull your own pants up and keep yourself out of trouble and sustain yourself without your mother, after you do that, then you can take it upon yourself to follow your dream and try to affect the universe. My guess is many of you are not doing that. Many of you are locked into thinking that it is mortal life that is the long time. It is mortal life that is the worthless time. That you are hoping to, praying to, saving up for that one opportunity when you leave this biological transducer and you go to that mystical place which those dogmatic religiosities have taught you is heaven. One of seven, one of 50, one of one, five of nine. It's out there, somewhere, after you die. If you die today, where will you spend eternity? Surprise! Eternity already began, and you're smack dab in the middle of it, and you're mortal. The amount of energy that's been expended to bond the spirit you and the physical you is beyond comprehension. The CERN super collider is going to punch two or a dozen particles together to try to learn how the universe was born. You already have the power and the intention and the knowledge inside of you. All you have to do is crack it open and remember. But that's easier said than done, you say. How do I figure out how to do that, you ask? What about the rest of my spirit existence? What about the existence before I became this particular biological transducer? Was I really a brilliant scientist? Was I really a tactician? Was I really a musician? Was I really that good with images, drawing or photographing? Was I really that comfortable in the ocean, holding my breath and diving with the dolphins? Have I always been able to fly, and that's why I enjoy being a pilot? Have I always been the surfer or the mountain bike rider that I am now? Have I always had that love? Great questions for yourself. So when you think about the separation of the spirit you and the physical you, let's just go ahead and call it what we call it, death. There is something more to consider here. The spirit, the portion of you that makes up the real you, that leaping, flying, wonderful gazelle, bird you, never dies. Only the biological transducer. That's what sinks back into the dirt. And there should be no fear in that transition. And as far away as it is, whether it's one day or whether it's a year, none of you know. You can say, oh, I'm going to live for another 30 years. Or you can say, I am probably not going to live another year. I've got an illness and it's going to take my life. I could list a number of country songs or rock songs that you could play for yourself that might inspire you to take a different outlook on life. That is to say, maybe I'll climb a mountain, ride a bike, learn a new trade, find another love, or spend more time doing the wonderful things that I want to do, whether they're grandkids or not. I can tell you that there is absolutely no value, no estimable value in the next moment. I would like to think that the next moment is worth more than all the money in the world. That the next moment is worth more than all the land, all the gold, all the food, all the ownership that you could ever imagine. The next moment is worth more than the wars, more than anything. And what are you going to do with it? That's the great question. Are you going to follow the religionists, truncate yourself, attenuate your abilities, and believe that you are filthy rags before some being out there in the universe who sits on a throne and says, you go to hell, you go to heaven, you go to heaven, you go to hell, you, heaven, 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 you three, I'm in a bad mood today, everyone goes to hell. Or are you going to open your mind, open your heart, release the fear that is inside of you, and consider the wonderful beauty of science. Pick a little bit of evidence. Design an experiment to prove or disprove a hypothesis. Proving the hypothesis or nulling the hypothesis allows you to form a theory. Stand on the theory and prove it till it becomes fact, and you have just changed faith into knowledge. Standing upon knowledge, you can reach with faith again and again to gain more knowledge, and stand with faith again to more knowledge. And that is the process of movement forward. As we consider quarks and the many flavors of subatomic particles that make up the matter of this world, whether we're busting a gold ion apart or we're trying to consider the real structure of water. Oh, sure, it's H2O. Of course it is. Of course it is. But water has the ability to arrange itself into structure, whether it's in liquid form or not. Now, sometimes we can better reveal the shape of that energy by freezing the water and watching the crystals that it makes. But there is definitely a difference, a provable difference, a absolutely fact-driven difference in water that has been exposed to hatred and water that has been exposed to love. That has been proven. And you're going to see more proof of that as it goes. By the way, I'm not sure if you realize this, but if you're young or middle-aged, you're probably a little better than 80 to 90% water. That's right. H2O, the moisture of your skin, the bulk of the plasma of your blood, the fluid that fills your eye and in which your brain floats, all of the systems, the physiologies of your system that communicate one with another, sustaining one another, sharing the duties of keeping alive and vibrant that biological transducer you're walking around this planet. That water can change structure. So as we concentrate on the quarks that make up the water, we try to figure out about the structure of the water. We realize great and powerful things. We realize how valuable that next moment is and what intention and what consciousness we will put into that environment in which those molecules operate so that when, not if, when the cells of our body die and are replaced, they are replaced in an environment which is conducive to a positive change or an improvement. Or a mutation in that body for the better part. Pay no attention to the train going by behind me. And then maybe we can consider the black holes on the other side of the spectra, the immense structures of space, those things that bend and warp space-time. As we stand here on Earth and consider the things that we can see from here, either with our eyes or with electronic assistance of some kind or another, we should remember that all of that light is from our perspective. All those galaxies that we see, all those zodiacal figures that we consider are from our perspective. From Sirius or from the planets that surround her, that system looks different. And from those distant systems out there, the rest of the universe looks different from there as well. That perspective, from the minute us, locked into life moment by moment, an entire flashbulb of mortality, is considering space. And wondering whether black holes exist at all. That one. And we're kind of in a dilemma because here we are, this being with the ability to imagine, to consider the smallest quanta, the greatest structures in the universe that may even link universes together. And yet we worry. We lock ourselves down in fear. We are shy to communicate one with another. Or we fall into the instincts that make up our beings, even though we really don't need those instincts. Those moments, those thoughts, the separation of the spirit from the biological transducer. Nothing to fear. Unless you consider that your memory is going to be wiped clean again and you're going to pop back into a new body with new capabilities, be they better or be they worse, and you're not going to remember. So, you can either worry about that and say, gee, if I die, I'm going to come back and I'm not going to remember who I am or what I've done. I'm not going to be able to pick up where I left off. I'm going to be stuck in the T-ball world all over again and not be able to pick up and take off 20 or 30 years ahead of ultimate mortal decay. Or you can say, I've got all the time in the universe because I can split it down to the point where I can multitask my consciousness and I can realize great, great things. I can have multiple careers parallel with one another, one on top of the other. I can write books. I can compose poetry. I can dance, and I can love the world even better than I do now. Just consider that it doesn't always go perfect. Even Jesus had enemies. You can build this. You can put it together. You can use faith to build knowledge, stand on knowledge, and use faith to keep going. Sort of, I can't give you enough analogies. You could use a ladder, you could use a car, you could use stairs, anything you want. Don't be afraid of losing your faith. Faith is the act of continuously moving forward. And don't worry about not being righteous. The righteous are the ones who are moving. The unrighteous are the ones that stopped moving. With rivers, we call this the damned. Don't dam up your river, people. Keep it moving. Keep it moving. We're going to play just a little bit of music. Cool your brain off a little bit. Don't go away. Philharmonic Girls Choir, average age 12 years old, just to give you a little music to calm your mind. It's one of the wonderful things about this planet is that we can make wonderful sounds with our voices, and when we combine our voices, we can make great music. We can also make great sounds, great words, things that affect the universe in a wonderful way. And maybe that's what I'm appealing to you tonight. Those of you that are sitting out there listening for entertainment, you know, I applaud you. You're there, you're listening, hopefully your universe is changing as we're speaking. But those of you that can act, those of you that can take the message, take the key that we're giving you, unlock the chains, everlasting chains that are around you, and open your minds and see the limitless eternity behind you and the limitless eternity ahead of you, and join the two together. Become the link that puts those two together. It is you who will change the universe. Not one by one, but somewhat like that a cappella choir. as a group, making a sound, making an energy that cracks the dogma of the world open and makes a way. Give us a call, toll free, anywhere, U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494, anywhere on Earth, off planet, inside the planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us, 530-776-5154. Realize it is Father's Day. Many of you are out as a father, consuming mass quantities, or you are taking a father out, buying him more than he should eat every day. But he is imbibing nonetheless in joy with you. This is June 21st, 2009, summer solstice. Interesting things going on in the world. I can tell you that very, very strange weather patterns going on right now. And as the Earth passes into this very strange place, this very unique place in the galaxy, as the solar system makes its rounds, this energy coming into our realm is not only affecting our planet, changing its weather, altering its jet stream and its Gulf streams and the behavior of its animals, it's also affecting our biological transducer. And it is, whether you're aware of it or not, having its effect on you. If you're waking up a little more irritable than usual, if you're waking up a little more enlightened than usual, it could be because this very special energy is bathing over you. Religionists might call this the Spirit of God pouring out upon the earth, giving everyone a common message to which they respond in some kind of act of random goodness or craziness. For scientists, we would say that it is a stimulus and response. We have a very unique stimulus coming into the universe. For those of you on the slightly metaphysical edge of that, would say that that energy is resonating with whatever it will. And those sympathetic effects, much like the acoustic guitar leaning in the corner, listening to the loud stereo, you are putting off a new sound. Whether it's a new neighborhood, whether it's a new attitude, or whether it's a new career, or a new love, you are changing, you are reacting to it. I don't want to say you have no control, of course you do. But you behave different in the summer than you do the winter, because of the ability to wear less clothes or more clothes and get out in the sun or not. You have that choice. You have that ability. So, as you react to this and you listen to the words and you realize that you've just been handed a key, look at this from a physicist's point of view. When we talk about the speed of light, don't really talk about speed at all. Speed, to a physicist, is just a comparison of distance with time. In fact, the speed of light, being so constant, and no matter what you're doing, whether you're chasing it or whether you're waiting for it to come by, it's always going 186,000 miles per second. It's one of the paradoxes of the universe. So, if that's the case, we don't talk of the speed of light. We talk of the distance of light. And when we talk of the distance of light, we might use terms like light year or, you know, light decade or whatever. We're talking about using the speed of light, the velocity of light, as a measuring stick, a yardstick by which we can link two distant points in the universe together enough so that we can quantify it, understand it. How far is that away? Well, I don't know, but if you want to measure it, it's probably something like 2 light years. That's the distance light can travel in 2 years, because the speed is constant. We think of it as a distance. Now, that being said, when a physicist considers distance, it's just a number line. If we, for instance, consider ourselves at the zero point of the number line, then there are a certain number of positive numbers above us, and there are a certain number of negative numbers below us, and the distance between the furthest negative number and the furthest positive number is the distance, and we're somewhere in between. Either it's the exact middle or somewhere in between. But the distance between those two points, the negative point and the positive point, is exactly the same, whether you go from the negative to the positive or the positive to the negative. And that's how we think of time. In fact, that's the proper way to think of time. So if you're thinking about the idea of remembering the past, whatever that distance is, it's identical to remembering the future. Now I'll say that one more time. It is just as far from here to Salt Lake City as it is from Salt Lake City to here. Exactly. With the exception of the fact that you can't drive on exactly the same road, because you'd have to avoid all the cars driving the wrong way on the freeway, it is the same distance from Salt Lake City to here as it is from here to Salt Lake City. Hence, it is the same distance from minus 283 to positive 84 as it is from positive 84 to minus 283. Exactly. So when I say remember the past, it's just as easy to say remember the future. Now that you're thoroughly confused, you now understand that looking forward may be ambiguous at best. You can begin to put the pieces together. Don't consider yourself a mortal being. You certainly are not. You are an eternal being having a mortal experience. And though my wish for you is to have a good mortal experience, let's quantify that. What is the difference between a good and a bad mortal experience? Oh my goodness, I woke up this morning with a toothache, I don't have a job, my car is broken down. That's a bad experience. But is it? Really? Look what you got to experience. You got to experience the toothache, the loss of a job, and your car not running. Imagine the person that everything went right in their life today. They woke up with a beautiful Colgate smile, perfect scope breath. Their car runs like a top. They've had the same job for 10 years. Which life would you rather have? Okay, don't answer that. I mean, both of them are experiences. Whether you grow up in the jungles of Southeast Asia fearing for your life, or whether you grow up in the China and silver world of some Rhode Island power family, both are experiences. And those experiences make up the environment that make up the genetic base, the genetic choice from which you build your body, from which you have your mortal experience. I know it's a little difficult to believe for you here in this land of bounty where you can virtually have anything you want almost exactly when you want it. And you compare it against a land like China, which our opinion is for the most part a third world country. And yet, you look at the people there. You go have lunch with them. You walk with them. You see them in the park. You see them riding their electric bikes to work. Guess what you see? Happiness, joy, fulfillment, satisfaction. In fact, the same love and wonder for this world that you feel when you come out of church in the morning at 11 o'clock and look at a beautiful spring day with your little patent leather girls on either side of you. Believe it or not, both are experiences. Both are wonderful. And so when everything is going wrong, you've just been hauled into the boss's office and told, we're downsizing today. and you say, geez, I wish I hadn't made that eBay purchase last night. I would still have that money in the bank, and I don't really need that new Xbox. That is an experience. Please enjoy the experience. We have a caller on line one. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Good evening, Dr. Brooks. This is Scott calling from Daytona Beach, Florida.
Welcome, Scott from Daytona. How are you?
Doing good. It's burning up down here. It feels like 300 degrees.
Cutting that down. 300 degrees? Got it. More weather anomalies for you. 300 degrees in Florida. Okay. What's on your mind, Scott?
Well, I just wanted to share, I was going to commemorate the solstice. I do a series of meditations on the solstice and equinoxes. And tonight is, it starts out with each night, three nights before and three nights after, and then the very night of, it has its own pattern. I got this from Lazarus way back, utilizing solstice and equinox energy. And it's an interesting meditation tonight. It's about not ongoing programs. That's the last evening. It's changes in process. Things that are in the process of changing is what to focus on tonight. Whereas the first night it was about changing patterns. The second night was about changing emotions you want to end. Third night, changing situations that you want to end. And now it's like we move through the letting go part, and now it's like focusing on what you want beyond this point.
When you say what you want, you mean the things that you desire to have or the things that you want to be or do in this life?
Could be any of those. Could be manifestation of life direction, vision quest, because that's going to be part of what I do this week too. And it could also be, like tonight I'm acknowledging changes in my life that are going on now and how this solstice is different than the last solstice, or rather the equinox that we had in March. And tomorrow night will be dreams and visions, personal and global, dreams and visions. Following night will be new desires that one hasn't yet had, and then the following night after that is the ongoing things you have and want to maintain in your reality.
Well, it sounds like a very cool exercise. It sounds like you've organized it well over the years.
Yes, I've been doing it for about 18, 19 years.
And how have things have progressed in those 18 or 19 years? Have you seen, you know, dramatic changes or progressive builds or disappointments?
I've seen new energies come in that were not expected. That it's kind of like it's helped me focus on my life, where it is now, what I want to let go of, what I want to move toward. And it kind of gives me it's like riding a wave. It's kind of like gives me the right wave to surf in.
Yeah.
Kind of like it helps me surf my reality.
I really like that motif. So now, are you training people to do that? Is there people that do this with you as a group?
There are probably other people who have used the tape from time to time. I don't know if people, it's an older one. It's an older meditation that I started with Lazarus back in 88, and I think I got this meditation in 89, 90. It's part of the Accelerated Journey series. And it's helped me focus on more what I truly want, and also to help me grow spiritually by letting go. When I'm talking about letting go, it's like, you know, like on the first night, letting go of patterns you want to end. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you know, it could be nail biting or overspending or, you know, whatever you want to put there. But I do overspending because I tend to do that from time to time. And that helps to maintain, my finances. And then the second night, you know, if there are emotions like, hurt or sadness or pain or anger or whatever, you can let go of that. The second night in the series, third night, the situations, like if you feel like you tend to sabotage yourself or anything like that, one could put that in and so on and so forth. And it kind of like that in and of itself helps to drop so much stuff out of the way so that one can manifest from that point on and focus on the personal and global dreams and visions, and then go on beyond that to manifest new desires and then manifest the ongoing things like, you know, shelter, car, food, workshops, things like that.
How I guess my question is, how has it progressed for you over the last 18 years? Have you've stuck with this kind of structured meditation where you're kind of guided through it? You learn how to dream properly. You learn how to focus properly on those dreams. Learn how to manifest those things. Have you seen your empire expand? Have you seen, you know, the scope of your love change over the last 18 years? Are you happy with it?
I am, and you know, like I've been asking for years, part of the personal and global vision, that's the major thrust for me, and I feel like in my lifetime here is to make some change in the world for the better, even if it's from my whatever scope and whatever limitations I'm working with, is one of the major focuses that I've had is clean air, clean water, protection of the forest, protection of the animals. And, you know, right now our country's in a crisis, the world's in a crisis, kind of frozen in it. And maybe that's part of it, is for us to stop and to look and say, okay, maybe we don't need to chop down this forest to put up a housing development. You know, maybe we can save this forest. Or maybe we're learning, you know, maybe the other, you know, unfortunately the, you know, there's no money now to do that. Maybe, unfortunately, that came about in an odd way, but it's some way preserves the environment. Yet to kind of, go ahead.
I gotta tell you, I appreciate the call. You've covered just about every single subject that we could talk about for a year, and I can't tell you how happy I am you're out there concentrating on all of this. Because it is, I'm sure, having its effect, and I'm sure that whatever crisis that we perceive we're in is going to crack, and we'll move on to a new crisis. That's just the way the human race is, whether it's a shortage of dry kindling for the local fire, or whether it's, you know, bad weather wiping out our crops, or truncating the varieties of species that are on the earth. Through our activities or other activities. But, you know, I'm just wondering how, you know, what is it we're going to learn out of this? What are we going to spread to other people specifically tonight that people can take to the bank, so to speak, to make a change not only in their personal life but in the lives of those around them? And, you know, it all starts with one individual and then goes to another, and it spreads, and believe it or not, when you take just 64 people, drop it into the mathematical equation, it doesn't take long for that to expand over the entire planet. The critical mass is reached in a big hurry. So do you see, you know, very quickly, because we've got about 60 seconds left in this hour, do you see that critical mass changing anytime soon? Because of the energy that you and those that are practicing this are putting into the environment?
I would say yes. I would say that, you know, with our present administration and the focus on the green energy and so on and so forth, as well as the point you brought out earlier in the program of valuing oneself and valuing everyone else.
Right.
I think that's crucial. I think it's crucial that we value each other, that we all have a mission here, that, you know, everyone is from wherever they're from in the universe, and we're all here to, you know, as part of the great experiment. Through the years of working with Lazarus, it's been implied that, you know, we're here to transform the experience here to a much better one. And by transformation, it's not a caterpillar with wings. It's a whole different insect.
I've got it. All right. Well, Scott, we are out of time. I have another caller on the line. I'm going to ask that caller to hold. We'll play a real quick piece of music, and then we will be right back. Scott, I really appreciate the call. Please call back again. Fascinating stuff. I want to learn more, okay?
Sure.
Thank you very much. All right, Earth Explorers, hold what you got. Scott, don't go away on the other line. We will be back in about 4 minutes. Just hang in there, relax. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. Wonderful, wonderful piece. Great inspirational piano just to settle your mind down. I believe we have another Scott on the line. Scott, welcome to the program. How are you tonight? I guess he hung up. I apologize for that. Sometimes callers go a little bit long and people get impatient and want to move on. We encourage you to call back, Scott. No problem. We just...
Hello?
Ah, there you are. Welcome to the program. Oh. How are you?
I'm sorry. I have an internet phone, so my internet acts up sometimes. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. I can hear you just fine. Welcome to the program.
Great. Yeah, how are you doing, sir? I just wanted to say I love your program. I just found it today for the first time. I did an internet search. I was looking for you, actually. And I did an internet search under you, and this is how I found your program. The question I have for you, I'm just this year becoming spiritual and forsaking religionality. Is this the word you're using?
Religiosity.
Yes, I gave that up, and but the thing is, I'm new, and I wanted to see if you have some advice about how to expand it.
Well, the interesting thing is that the expansion is actually the release of the dogma of religion. That is to say, the fear that's placed upon you. Oh, you can't go there. Don't think about that. You must believe, because if you do not believe, Santa Claus, I mean, God is going to come and get you. And
I've heard that all my life.
Sure you have. Of course you have. It's like, well, you must believe that the Bible is the Word of God. And of course we do. Of course we do. Because they are words written, and the words inspire, and they lead us to great and poignant introspection. So of course they're the words of God. The question is, as you're reading that book, which is really the biblio, the library, the collection of the Old Testament and New Testament, which represent, at least to me, when I read it, and many millions of others, two completely different deities at the head of things, what are we trying to tell people when we read this? Are we trying to tell people that God is a genocidal, jealous, schizophrenic, or do we believe that God is a great teacher and healer and one who is trying to teach us three basic things? That we should love ourselves, that we should love our neighbors, and by doing that, we will love God. I think that's a pretty basic, simple lesson. And try as I might, when I read the New Testament, and believe me, you can read all the red letters, which are all the words that Jesus actually spoke from his mouth in the New Testament, in about 45 minutes. In reading that over and over again, I fail to see, and I am not without the ability to understand what one writes. I fail to see where he established a church, where he established a religion. That's because he didn't. What he tried to get us to see is that we are the power. We are the source. We can do what he did and more. That's what he tried to get across to us.
I agree with you. And may I ask you one quick question, kind of getting off that topic? Is your expedition still on?
The expedition is is always on. As to whether it's going to take place in August of 2009, it doesn't look like it. I'll tell you why. And this is a rather recent culmination, I will say. We probably realized it at the beginning of this year, but we had hopes that we would be able to overcome this challenge. As it turns out, the Russians have some sovereignty over the ocean north of the Siberian Islands. And so in trying to work with shipping companies that can take 100 scientists or more, hopefully, if we can do that, north of the Siberian Islands, there's a challenge. It all boils down to one shipping company called the Murmansk Shipping Company. They operate a fleet of very, very unique boats. One of them is nuclear-powered. Others are certainly as capable of reaching this very, very inner area above the Arctic Circle. That being said, there are other ocean liners that certainly cruise the Nordic areas, but we can't convince them, no matter how much we try, money or politics or whatever, to sail north of the Siberian Islands. So we are locked into this one shipping company that operates through two charter companies, and that charter costs $2 million. That's a lot of money to fight rates.
I have a suggestion that might be able to help you. Do you know, in England, the Princess Anne and the Princess Marguerite is no longer being used. They're hovercraft ships. They can also go on the land as well as, in other words, you can they'll go over the ice.
Well, that's always a possibility. The problem is that once we leave the port in Murmansk, Russia, we will stop in Finland, but we can't take on any equipment and we can't take on any passengers. According to international law, when we leave a port, we have to return to that port with the same passengers that we left with. The problem is the distance from Murmansk or from any of those northern ports to where we're going is certainly within reach of a diesel craft, but you can only go there and come back. You can't go there and stay for 14 days and do the experiments that we need to do. Also consider that these are the roughest seas on Earth, with the exception of Tierra del Fuego at the bottom of South America. This is a really rough place to go, so you need a very big ship to be able to handle this voyage.
Do you have another site that I could monitor on?
Yeah, we have two websites that cover the expedition. One is for the person that wants to know the greater details, the business plan, the current focus, those kinds of things. That is phoenixsciencefoundation.org. And the other one is much more mainstream. It deals with the science, with the business of the expedition. And that is NPIEE.org, N-P-I-E-E. That stands for North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, NPIEE.org.
That's easy to remember.
Right.
And glad I found this site also, because you answered two things for me. One is the spiritual side, which I'm really getting involved with, and I really want to learn as much as I can. And you've been a big help there, and you're a big help because I'm very interested in your expedition. I'm sorry, and I've been paying attention to what's going on, and I think you're right on track. I'm really interested to see your results.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, a lot of people look at my professional life and the things that I do during the day, and sometimes the expedition and even this radio program become a liability because people think, oh, gee, he's one of those people that believes the Earth is hollow. He believes in UFOs. He's a real nutcase. But if you actually go to the websites and read the content, you'll find nothing could be further from the truth. We're actually scientists, and we are seeking very honestly, very scientifically, proof to back up a hypothesis that the Earth might be hollow. If we can find enough evidence, it certainly makes it interesting. If we can find no evidence, that's also interesting. But at least we're going about it scientifically, and we're not going to throw out any data, and we're going to take the ability to gather that data from multiple viewpoints, not just ours.
And the nice thing, too, you won't be classifying the data either.
Well, that's true. We are, for the most part, going to try to stream as much of it live on the web. And then certainly when we get back, if we film 3,000 hours or 4,000 hours of film, all of that film will eventually be used. Nothing is going on the editing room floor unless we happen to film somebody of the 100 that are on that ship doing something that they don't want on the screen. Like leaning over the side, feeding the fish from seasickness, that's something certainly we wouldn't put on the air, unless, of course, they approved it. But we are going to be doing a plethora of experiments, not just with the seawater itself, trying to find out if there's a new source of seawater coming in from somewhere deep beneath the Earth, but also the sky and magnetism and even human consciousness experiments. It will be enlightening, to say the least.
Absolutely, I agree. Well, I do thank you so much for taking my call, and you've been a big help to me. All I want to say is keep up the good work, and I'll be paying attention to what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it. Your encouragement is worth more than you know, and I'm grateful for it. Thank you very much.
Good evening.
All right. So we, as I said, we have the phone lines open, those of you that want to call in. I just gave you the phone numbers, but as Scott proved to you, there are more ways to get in here. You can call us toll-free at 888-228-4494. You can call us if you've got free nights and weekends on your cell phone. If you can get to a tower, you can get to us, 530-776-5154. But you can also call us over the web. You can use Skype by simply calling in at BBS Radio, or you can even use Paltalk by going to BBSRadio_com. So whichever way you're listening to us live, whether it's over the radio, because many, many radio outlets rebroadcast the show, some live and some after the fact. And also, we broadcast over the Internet, which means, for all intents and purposes, because we're on BBS Radio Network, we are a global radio program reaching all over the world live at the same time. Our audience is eclectic and deep thinkers and poignant, and you are all welcome here. So if you're using any of those... And by the way, I'm just informed Paltalk does not function anymore. So if you're trying to call us on Paltalk, switch to Skype, please. And that will work a lot better for us. And you'll be able to hear crystal clear because we have about a gajillion bytes of bandwidth at the studio, and we can get you crystal clear on the radio globally. And tonight, that archive will go up automatically at bbsradio.com, and it will also go up at xsquaredradio.com. And if you are one of our listeners listening through Conscious Media Network, we welcome you as well. And don't forget, when you finish listening to this program, there are more than 70 other programs that you can listen to along these same lines. If it's not mainstream, it's probably on BBS Radio. So go to bbsradio.com day or night and find a channel and a host that would interest you. So here we are. Let's see. I have an IM coming in from a person named Bob. It says, I am one of those persons who has been thinking about the dilemma of choosing which source, the science community or the religious community, to build my belief foundations from. Don't end sentences and prepositions, Bob. On one hand, I am told, choose science because it will teach us better in our modern times. But then, wasn't it science that makes a virtue of refusing to investigate matters of consciousness or spirit worlds? Very good point, Bob. Proclaiming there are no spirit worlds and no non-physical supernatural beings. Brilliant observation, Bob. Going so far as to actively deride anyone in their own profession to even attempt to investigate the possibility. And by the way, Bob, that extends to geologists who are helping archaeologists date things and then being discredited because they can't possibly be that old. How is it they say, they can say definitely it is not so in one breath, and then in another they say they have done nothing in their prospective fields of science instead of experiments to determine it as fact. So on the one hand, Bob, you're saying they have stated it as fact, which by the way is a direct observation or the proof irrefutable of a hypothesis from experimental data. And you're saying that they have done neither, and yet they determine it to say fact. Very good observation. So how does one accept their hypothesis, even when they say they have no definitive information to offer on the subject? In fact, science has no evidence of the non-existence of spirit worlds. Isn't this wrong for it to say that it does? Yes, it is. It is just as wrong for them to say that spirit worlds do not exist as it is to say the side of the sheep that you can see from the highway is or is not shorn because you can see the side facing the freeway. Exactly right. They cannot make the observation, they cannot gather the data, or they will not gather the data, and so therefore, you're right. They are wrong in that conclusion. And so when you go to websites that say, oh, well, it's bad science to say that faster than light travel is possible. It's bad science to say there's a dimensional gateway somewhere on the earth that leads to another dimension of the earth, fourth or fifth or whatever. Don't believe it. It's good science because we are gathering data and we are weighing that data against the hypothesis to produce a proof or a null of that hypothesis and thus establish scientific fact. He goes on, then there is the religious sector who says we have all the information ever acquired on the subject and to rest easy because we are your source for knowledge and growth. And yet wasn't it a Christian mob in Alexandria in the year 391 that destroyed its library with some 700,000 historical documents? Absolutely true, Bob. Religion marched into one of the greatest, if not the greatest, ports on earth with one of the most amazing libraries full of archaeology information, architectural information on the pyramids and Atlantis, and they burned it, claiming it had all been written by pagans. Proud to be a pagan, Bob. I'd put it on my bumper tomorrow. A powerful church under Constantine who took what was left of spiritual teaching and further reduced our source of information by editing and censoring what went into the Bible, El Biblio, leaving out many of history's previous manuscripts, documents, and gospels, actually leaving us with a book that tells us less about the nature of human spirituality than the generations before it was published, practiced, and knew. That's a brilliant observation, Bob. That the power of the state moved in and officially sanctioned and unsanctioned, or should I say canonized and uncanonized, irrefutable truths that had been established over thousands of years of experimentation, proof, and knowledge, and instead of enlightening the world, plunged it into darkness and death and genocide. He goes on, nothing new is being pursued to bring us more aware by the religious establishment. No study with scientific merit is being done to validate and confirm their teachings or move us forward in our understanding and potential growth in this belief system. It would appear they wrote a book 1,500 years ago and pretty much drained their brain capital in the doing. Actually, Bob, they didn't write the book. What they did is they gathered up all of the writings. Some are called the pseudepigrapha. That would be false teachings or false writings. And they decided this one goes in, this one goes out, this one goes in, this one goes out. They gathered up all the ones that go in, say, by the way, they go in this order, and that order shall never be changed, or you'll be put to death. By the way, they went a step further, Bob. They also said, don't translate this word into any other language. So Martin Luther did it. He was a little too powerful for them, He did it in German, and he managed to escape with his life. But then others translated it into English, and thanks to the Gutenberg press, began spreading it. But they caught up with them and killed them. You may not know it, but the 23rd Psalm, one of the most beautiful and well-known verses in the Old Testament, did not read so poetically in its original language. No, it was the inspiration. It was the love and the openness and the wonderful vision of a man named William Tyndale who took that dogma and translated it into English that inspired millions and millions to understand how to walk without fear. And they caught up with him, and they put him in prison, and he became frail. Lest he should die in prison of natural causes, they dragged him out of jail. They choked him to death, and they burned him at the stake for his 23rd Psalm. Just to give you an idea who founded your religions. He goes on, if our two sources of education on the spiritual human and consciousness have pretty much taken themselves out of the equation of where we get scientific experiments and technological growth in furthering our understanding of the subjects, where are we to get it from? Well, Bob, we get it from Source. And when you realize that you are Source, when you stretch your imagination out there, where do you think it's coming from? I have a caller, Mark, on line one, but just hold on 1 second, Mark. I'm almost finished. I'm sure I'm not the only one out there who wants to find credible sources on these subjects. Where are the new institutions of credible sources or research that we can support in order to explore and find some education? Or how do we motivate the establishment institutions to begin doing some serious exploration on these subjects? That's a very good question, Bob. We'll answer it before the end of the program. Mark from Ohio, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. How are you tonight?
I'm doing excellent. Welcome.
You know, that was a pretty amazing little story that you just told. I had never heard that before about the 23rd Psalm.
Well, William Tyndale was a very gifted translator, and as the word was being translated into English, there's a somewhat humorous paradox here, and that is that the Gospels were being translated into English and being bought by people, and thus financing the printing of more. But the church offered a bounty on those scripts, and as the people brought them to the church paid for them, piled them in huge piles, doused them with oil, and lit them on fire. But every week the fires got larger and larger and larger, and finally the cardinal made a public statement in frustration. Why is it? Who is it that is financing the printing of all this material? And the answer was, they were. Their bounty was so high on those scriptures that it was enough for people to have two printed. They bring one to the church and have it burned, and they got the other one for free.
Oh, that's funny. That's amazing. Truly incredible. I had a verse for you, since we're on the subject of the Bible, that I thought I would share with you. I'm sure you've heard it before. It's James 3:13, and it says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. And what strikes me about that verse is that relationship between humility and wisdom, and they seem to go hand in hand, and I wondered if you could comment on that.
Yeah, actually, I really like James as a writer because he actually tied three things together in that verse. Not only did he tie the wisdom and the humility, but he also tied the doing. You see, the action, the energy that one puts into it. It isn't just the sitting around and thinking, the piousness, the self-righteousness, the comparison of oneself to another, saying, I'm better than you. But it is the humility of saying, you are at least as important as I am, and you are valuable. And that humility, and by the way, that's a very peculiar comparison, because when you try to look at yourself and say, gee, am I humble or am I not humble? It's a little hard to grade yourself. And it's even more frustrating when someone comes to you one day and says, you know, you're a very humble man. Because the first thing that happens to you is become proud that you're humble. And then you've just reversed the process. So the idea is if you just follow the three basic commandments of loving yourself and then by that loving others, you have automatically begun the process of loving God, because God is each and every one of us together. And I know that sounds a little schizophrenic, but there is the wisdom of that humility.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I'm reading a book called Mass Contacts by Stefan Brecka, and it was Paula Harris that recommended this book. And it's a story about a mass contact that took place in Italy. And at least one of the very human-looking ETs that was near Italy for, I guess, almost 10 years, there was in the book a long recorded conversation between this ET and one of the humans there. And they asked the ET about God. And what the ET said is that humans, in a sense, are God. And he went on to kind of elaborate in that sense. And I think that's the part maybe that is so confusing in many ways, because most religious people, and I've even thought this myself, thought that that would be a very arrogant thought. But I think that Jesus did say, and I think it's John 10:34, where he said, "You are all gods." So I think that's a very profound concept to try to wrap your mind around, especially since we're in these little frail human bodies. But I wondered if you could comment on that.
Well, sure. I mean, John 10:34 was a statement in frustration made by Jesus as he was being hounded by the Pharisees, who were, we would call them lawyers today, but they were experts in the semantics of the word. And Jesus kind of turned around and said, this is John 10:34, and actually he's quoting Psalms when he says it. He says, "Is it not written, I have said, ye are gods unto whom the word is given? And yet you stone me for saying that I am the Son of God." So this relationship that Jesus is trying to explain to us was recorded a long, long time before he got here in this mortal body. What he's trying to explain to us is, yes, you are gods, and yet you have truncated yourselves in this mortal body that feels pain and scarcity, and also it feels abundance and wonder and creation. You have the ability to create life in your own image, and you also have the ability to take life. And so when you look at the world, the optimist would look at it and say, we live in the best of all possible worlds. The pessimist would say, well, I fear that's true. We do live in the best of all possible worlds. This is as good as it's going to get. What they have to realize is the world is what they have created. So they are the creators. And the universe, in fact, is the sum of the intention of every sentient being in it, whether he is aware that he is conscious or not. And so therein lies great responsibility. When you look at the condition of the world, and by the way, the world could be your city block or your own home or where you work. Many people don't travel very far. Some travel broadly. But certainly the world is, in some respect, under your control, under your creative control, whether it is wonderful or whether it is terrible. So once you realize that, you realize that you're participating in it, you're not just spectating it, then you're empowered. And you may feel a little shocked at first by, holy crap, you mean I can turn the knobs on the machine? Yes, you can. And you can make the world anything you desire. The challenge, the wisdom of it, the humility of it, is to desire something that is wonderful.
You know, I sometimes think that this whole UFO ET phenomena is the key to understanding our theology and our technology. And one of the thing I wanted to remind you of before I get off here, I know other callers are probably waiting. I wanted to remind you about Sheldon Neidl. He has that DVD out on the inner Earth, and he goes into great detail about the crystal cities in the inner Earth, and he claims to have been there himself. And I just thought you might find that pretty interesting.
I do. I know you know, Diane Robbins, and I know Michael Sunbear, and I know several others that have had visions of cities and have claimed to visit them and bring back their reports of it. And I really have no report on it. I don't have. I'm not skeptical, but I'm not widely accepting. I'm a scientist. I'm looking for evidence. So, you know, certainly a sprig, a local newspaper, something, you know, of proof is what I'm looking for. And
sure.
The imaginations of those out there for me is not quite enough. But I'm not discounting it. I'm just saying it's not quite enough to tip the balance for me.
I hear what you're saying totally. And thanks for your time. I always enjoy it very much. And have a good evening.
Oh, thank you so much for the call, and give my best to your kids. Happy Father's Day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, Einstein said in 1941, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. So there you have it. Dale, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. You have a great program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's not great without you. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that I occasionally am able to push my ego aside and let my consciousness come out. And it took me so many, many years to get to this point. I'm still working on it. But I think there's more than 64 people on the planet that are released at that stage. What do you think?
Well, I certainly hope so. I guess we the fun thing to do, Dale, would be to get them all in the same place and see what happened. I hope that there's more than 64. You know, it is said in every age there is a handful of beings that really understand everything. And sometimes they make their impact on history, like Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo. And sometimes they die in ignominy. We never get to know them because they get trapped behind enemy lines, so to speak. They get caught in suppression. Or they're enabled with great wealth and they can do wonderful things like Tesla. And I think at this time, being that there's so many people alive on the earth and information can move so quickly, and we can gather such immense resources in an instant, that there are many, many more than 64 on the planet right now. And that's why things are accelerating. Is that what you feel too, Dale?
Yes, and I know that change is inevitable. We are going to evolve no matter what the religionists or the negative types say. It's just going to happen. It's irresistible. We can't stop it. It's going to happen.
Well, I hope so. I hope that change is the engine that that we've learned to start. Because when you look at the history of the world, not individual communities, but the history of the world, the engine seized up for a while, in my opinion. It stopped working. And it wasn't until the chains, and I'm going to call them the everlasting chains of death, which is religion, it wasn't until those chains were broken and people managed to sell everything they had and get on little wooden ships and sail across the Atlantic and try to form a new world, a new nation, a new Jerusalem, one where people could have freedom of religion and open thought and pursue their dreams. Maybe it was the catalyst that changed the world. But in 1785, it became a reality, and within 30 years, the change engine had started up again, and I hope we never look back. Do you?
Oh, of course. Yes, I agree with that 100%. You know, people get confused because they get so wrapped up in their everyday lives, and they're programmed, and And every so often, though, for myself, I'm able to cut through the programming and cut through the bull and actually get a glimpse of consciousness. I'm not 100%, but I understand that there's something going on, and I think I'm changing.
Well, that's good. I think that's good. And by the way, I liked your comment a little bit ago about pushing your ego aside. It is one of the toughest things to do. I think it is what we struggle with as human beings, because when we discover our sovereignty, it is sometimes by mistake, sometimes in error, and we become a little arrogant. We become a little full of ourselves, and we have a tendency from time to time, or very often for some of us, to stand up and say, hey, what about me? I think we should take Dale's advice tonight and just push the ego aside a little bit and say, hey, what about Earth?
The last thing I'd like to leave you with is the first 12 years of my adult life, I was trained for warfare. And now I've passed the 50 mark, and I understand that it had its place, but it's obsolete now. We got to stop killing.
You know, Dale, I have never heard words that I agreed with more than that. I think if that was the one thing we could play every 30 minutes on Fox News instead of what we do, it would be, we have to stop killing. You're exactly right.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. Good night,
Dale. Thank you, Dale. Thank you so much. You're welcome. Welcome anytime.
Bye.
All right. I have had a person email me in through the website from Trinidad. Rini, this is your question. My question is, why have they spent so much money going to the moon and other planets looking for life but afraid to visit the inner Earth? What are they afraid of? Well, you know, I don't really know what they're afraid of, but I will tell you, as a scientist, when I began to contemplate the idea that Earth might be hollow, I wasn't open-minded. I was pretty closed-minded about it. But as a scientist, I had to overcome that. I really had to do what Dale said and push my ego aside, and I began gathering more information. Now, I wasn't focused on it. It just came piece by piece by piece, and over the years, I realized, you know what? I think I need some more information. I'm going to access an expedition that's actually gone there and see what they found. And that is what was missing. So we'll cover that a little more in a few minutes. Joe, on line 3, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Agnew.
How are you tonight?
Hello. Good, and yourself?
I'm doing great. It's probably the best Father's Day ever. How are you?
Yes, I just got two nice cards from my grandson, so it's making my day, too.
That's awesome. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the things that you were saying tonight. One thing about Jesus when he walked the earth, it was the religious community of his day that wanted to kill him.
Yep. It's kind of interesting to consider that even Jesus had enemies.
Yes. Yeah. Also, just to touch on a few things. In the beginning of the program, you were talking about fire. If you ever watch the campfire, you see the main body of the fire, and then you see the little sprigs of fire that shoot off it. In the New Testament, in the Greek, you see it a lot of times where it says that you are the phos, which is a flame of the fire. So,
well, I agree with
all
that.
All the same chemistry, but just little pieces of it.
Well, you know, we as individuals are part of the fire. We're not the fire. And that's what I think people have to realize is when Jesus turns around and tells people, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament, ye are gods. He is not, I think, trying to say, You are individually rulers of the universe and can thereby judge all of mankind. I think instead he is saying that you are collectively God. And if you will work together, you can create anything that you can imagine. You are here to learn that, to understand that, that you don't have all the answers as a mortal, because you only have one single lifetime from which to draw information, unless you're willing to stretch your mind out and stretch your consciousness out and see if you can remember more. And it appears some individuals in the last couple hundred years have been able to do that very, very well. And that's why, Joe, we're not still riding horses.
Paul in 1 Corinthians spoke of a time where a change would come. He called it a deep mystery. He said, I show you a deep mystery. We shall not all die. Seventh trump. That's the last trump. He said, but all flesh shall be changed instantly in a twinkling of an eye.
That energy translation that Paul is talking about, which is that changing from one form into another form, not dying, not being consumed, was also done temporarily several times. Moses did it on the Mount. Peter, James, and John did it as Jesus took them to the Mount of Transfiguration. And they were a little shocked by it. I mean, they were definitely out of their element. But in order to stand that higher, shall we call it, glory, that higher dimension, that higher state of being, we do physically have to change the matter in our bodies. This body, stuck in the third dimension, is subject to decay and disease, and it's weak, and the molecular forces that keep it together are not very strong at all. But that higher level of matter, that Adamic matter, is quite capable of handling those higher energy levels.
Also, he spoke of a change of the mortal, which refers to the soul. So not only is the physical changing, but the soul would go through a transformation. Some, he says, would achieve the level of immortality. In other words, their soul would not be able to be destroyed after that point. And some would have to go into that change with the ability to die, but with the ability to have that eternal life. So even in that, after this change, some
people... You know, it's interesting when we consider the eternality of the soul and the fact that we're in the middle of eternity or somewhere at one end or the other, but certainly eternity began a long time before we got here. There is a principle in the scriptures, and it's mentioned in Second Revelations very clearly. It is the principle called to go no more out, but to become a pillar of heaven. It means to go no more out into mortality, because you don't need mortal experiences anymore. You have reached the pinnacle of mortality, of mortal experience, and you are now a pillar of heaven. This is the change that Paul is talking about here.
Also, I'd like to touch on a couple other things, if I could. The Earth, from what I can see in the Book of Job, the Earth has drains and faucets in it. I don't remember exactly where I saw that, but it was a couple of
things. The Book of Job. I'm sorry, Job was saying what?
That the earth had drains and faucets in it.
Yes, indeed. Right.
Regulated the levels of the water. And
right.
The coastline would be set. And the water could not pass beyond a certain point.
Yep, I thought that. I can't remember that particular part of Job, but I do remember that he did mention the deep places of the earth. And even in Isaiah, where it talks about the 10 tribes of Israel coming out of the north countries on a highway of ice. Some very, very remarkable things where people believe that, you know, there are actually races, maybe ancient races, living inside the earth.
Woolly mammoths.
Right.
Anywhere between 14 to 18,000 years ago, woolly mammoths have been found recently with buttercups still fresh in their mouth, frozen in the tundra of Alaska and Russia. So there had to have been an instantaneous freeze.
It would have to be pretty quick. I mean, a change from the area where that thing got fresh honeysuckles in his mouth to either frozen solid or frozen significantly within a very short amount of time. That's a very rapid change in weather.
What possibly could cause something like that?
That's a good question. There have been several theories on that, like an ice asteroid or a sudden blizzard. We've actually seen changes of temperature over 100 degrees in a single day, and it's been recorded. Joe, I hate to do this to you, but we don't have a lot of time, and I've got some other people on the line. I want to encourage you to call back again, though, because I love to talk about the scriptures if you want to talk more.
Oh, yes, I will talk.
All right, thank you so much, Joe.
Okay.
Will from Virginia on line two, you're on the program.
If you want to hear some deep shit, all right.
What's up?
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, this is Will from Virginia Beach.
Hi, Will. Welcome to the program.
I got a really, really deep question for you.
I like them.
All right. Since we're all energy, all right, there was an hallucination of the energy, which is source, which is God, which is nothingness, because before there was manifestation of physicality, there was just nothingness. So that was source and God or self or whatever you want to call it. So my question is, actually, being that origination, is there a potentiality of that source becoming a physical manifestation in every world or any multiversal dimension to become and participate in that evolutionary leap like we're going through on this planet? Because I know that other planets have gone through the same thing that we're going through right now, just this is diverse, and this is different, and this is going to affect the entire multiverse at the same time. So I'm just thinking, you know what, okay, if there's an origination of that, can that be God being source, being the origination of all this, of everything, become an actual physical human being on this planet? That's all I want to know, if you've ever thought about that.
Yeah, certainly. Source being, say, a singularity or a single origination, not physical, but more, shall we say, wave function, somehow divided itself. Now, I like to think that this division is a square root, not just a dividing in two. Because when you take the square root of this, you get a number called phi. And phi is the root of the golden mean, 1.618 to 1.
Right.
This is the division ratio of nature. It is what happens in space when it's not messed with. It is the natural tendency, the resonation frequency, not resonation frequency, resonation ratio by which frequency can constructively interfere with itself. And so as source did the square root of itself, generating this phi number, and then did it over and over and over and over again, the souls or the intelligences of this universe came from that. As that those waves collapsed into particles, we now have the 5 or 6% of our universe that we can see that actually puts off light, that actually moves and tugs on stars all around the universe. But a clear 93 to 94% of that universe we cannot see. Yet it emits gravity, yet it tugs on the galaxies and clusters and superclusters of the universe. It warms that microwave hum of the universe that we can observe, and yet we cannot observe it because it has not yet collapsed from the wave function into the particle function. And so this is our involvement in this quasi-multiverse. We are God, and we do, by our own consciousness and intention, affect the collapse of waves to particles and the acceleration of particles back to photons.
Okay. I'm just drawn by the separated oneness, which is everything. We're separated oneness. But there had to be an origination for that oneness, and I'm trying to think that, you know how you hear all these lifetimes and life streams and these people that have actually, like, reincarnated? I'm just trying to figure out if the actual origination of Source or God actually can come into existence as a human being, and that was actually, like, you know, what they are. In other words, if you go back in past and you hit the Akashic Records, and you go and you see how long they've been around, in other words, they've been around ever since infinity, so therefore they are pretty much the originators of God.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. You know, I mean, we're all, like, parts of God, yes, but I'm talking about the origination of the actual thought that actually manifested everything in the first place. I mean, there's lost books of the Bible, which is the actual, like, I think it's the secret book of John, which is actually a real thing that I've read, and it talks about pronoia and enoia, and I don't know if you've ever heard of that. And, more or less, pronoia was the female side of actually, like, Source, and then enoia was the male. And enoia was the thought, and pronoia was the action, or the manifestation. I just wondered, can those two parts of self become a human being on this planet?
Yes, they can. When you apply them together, what you've done is you square the results of that square root that I told you about, the pronoria, in other words, the male and the female forces, the action and the thought forces, and you create a single individual soul from that.
Right. It's very interesting to just, like, even think about that.
Well, I'm glad you came here to think about it, because we love to think about this stuff.
I've seen you in Charlotte Lake very soon with my girlfriend, so, and we have talked to you a lot. You know my name. I know. By now, you should know my name, Will, from Virginia Beach. I'm definitely going to be up there, and I can't wait for this experiment to actually, because I told my girl, I was like, you know what? If we can't actually, like, you know, at least be on the ranch, I'm going to actually climb the mountain anyway, so.
That's awesome. Well, that experiment is going to be amazing, absolutely amazing. It was energized a little bit last year, but the one John Riley with Zero Point Research has built this year is even bigger, it's better, it's more powerful, and it is going to be amazing. If you were there last year and you photographed that night what happened, I promise I have never seen more energy, more orbs, more plasma in one place in my life ever. It was like a huge orb hurricane around this group of people. It was amazing.
I'll tell you, as each year goes in the future, it's going to be more intense than the last. I'm telling you, we're going through a quickening just like in the movie Highlander. It's awesome.
I believe that, too. I believe that, too. Take it easy, Will.
You, too, and I'll talk to you later, and I'll see you later. Bye.
Right. See you on the 4th. I'm going to quote from Buddha here. He says, do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it. Do not believe in anything simply because it is spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything simply because it is found written in your religious books. Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for many generations. But after observation and analysis, when you find that anything agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it. My friend Buddha. People, Earth Explorers, I appreciate so much you coming with us tonight. Thank you for all the calls, and we will see you on the 28th of June. Peace. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.